live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And Pinterest, Neil Haley. And I'm so excited about my guest. One of the best NFL wide receivers I consider. Six-time Pro Bowler, 10,000-yard receiving club plus 2,000 decade all-decade NFL team. I want to welcome the program, Celebrity Apprentice, Terrell Owens. Terrell, how are you, man? And I'm appreciate you calling the program.
I'm good, man. How are you?
Fantastic. It's amazing to watch what's happened to you in the last 6 months. We talk about the Super Bowl commercial to being on the Celebrity Apprentice, and we're seeing a different Terrell for sure, I think, in a lot of ways to what we saw a long time ago in your playing career. Really a playful guy, somebody really interesting to learn about, and I think you like that, right? A different side of you for sure, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think I'm just, everybody gets to see, another side of Terrell, obviously the football player. Everybody always has had this perception of me based on my football persona. So, again, we're in a world and an age now where we have reality TV and we have a number of shows and we have a number of social media outlets where, obviously now we have more of a voice, but I think with the platform that I've been put on and I've been privy to be a part of, talking about the NBC Celebrity Apprentice with Donald Trump, and I've had my own reality show, it gives everyone, obviously, as you said, a different side and different perspective of and a different perception of who I am. So I'm just thankful, and blessed that, God has put me in a number of situations to show people otherwise. So other than that, I'm being myself. It's no different than I've ever been in my life. Again, like I said, everybody's now being able to see that side of me.
And that's the problem. The media paints a picture, Terrell, and then that's what they think. And specifically, that could be just one bad day or one certain situation or how people want to write. But then when you finally see who you are and see how you work, and I think that Life After Football is a perfect timing to show what you're doing life after football, being on the Celebrity Apprentice, learning what you're doing currently and kind of showing that not just the competitive sides you had in football, you have the same competitive edge when it comes to business, for sure.
Absolutely. And I think with the show, as I mentioned, definitely gives you and has given myself a different platform than what I'm accustomed to. Again, obviously, to be able to be put in a position to be selected as project manager and having to be able to delegate tasks and be a person that has to be in charge of having people execute those tasks. It was a good feeling. For myself, now post football, obviously trying to get in some business ventures. And really trying to, have those things, get off the ground. That was definitely a platform that I needed. Definitely got my juices flowing in terms of being business savvy, business minded, and really knowing how to really just really take care of myself and take hold of really my entity, my empire. So, again, I have a long way to go, and you have guys like Donald Trump, who obviously is a great blueprint for being successful. He's a guy that's had his ups and downs, and no one's perfect, and neither am I. So again, it was just interesting just to understand, obviously what it takes, to make a business successful, and it doesn't take just one person. It takes a collective effort, by everybody and a lot of parts involved.
Working with the different celebrity entities on this show and their personalities and different things, it's a lot more different than, I guess, dealing in the locker room, right, with a team, because you have such a wide variety, especially you're looking at all these superstars all on one team. It must be interesting, right, especially some of them that had more experience in business than you did, and then others that are just think they are business savvy but really don't have a clue.
Yeah,
So you saw all those different things.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are some interesting parts to it, but I think there are some parallels to football in terms of having a number of different people, personalities, egos, and having to really collect all those egos and put all those egos in line in order to obviously to perfect or bring to fruition, the task at hand. And so obviously, you know, with the task of whatever it was in terms of the celebrity printing, you know, there was a lot of people in the room that, you know, thought they knew it all, and some of the people were a little bit more informative and a little bit overzealous and really trying to throw their weight around a little bit. There's always going to be those people where, you know, some people may think they know it all, and there are some people going to be a little bit more reserved in terms of their input. And we try to not to be so overbearing, but, you know, depending on who the project manager, you know, just to be a part of a team concept, you got to have something. You want to bring something to the table. And there are going to be times where, you know, you're going to be able to bring a little bit more than someone else on depending on the project than the other person. So at the end of the day, just like I said, it's a parallel. We're all trying to reach a common goal. And we have to do that collectively, and we have to do it together in order to do that. So everybody kind of has to pull their weight. And, you know, I think it's just a great overall experience knowing that, you know, for me, I related it to football because I saw what was going on. There was a lot of different dynamics that were, you know, a part of what was going on in the different personalities. Sometimes there had to be some mediating between some personalities here and there in order to kind of, you know, get things moving forward. So we were really trying to move forward, not take steps back. And, you know, that's how it is sometimes. Life, you know, it's just like life. You know, sometimes life's going to give you some curveballs, going to give you some humps, get some bumps in the road here and there, but you got to keep moving forward.
What kind of advice did you get before going on the show? Talking to specific people that have been on The Apprentice, did you get an opportunity to talk to them or watch other shows to kind of prepare? It was interesting. John Rich, who won Celebrity Apprentice, told me, I interviewed him. He said, hey, I made sure I didn't, you know, cause lots of waves. I really was a team player. I understood what was going on and what my persona to keep going to get to that final part, because I knew if I made it that far, I was going to win. Did you get any advice going into this to this event? Because, you know, you see specifically one bad week and you're gone, especially if you're the project manager.
Well, no, I tried to get as much information I could going into it. I was one of the late entries or additions to the show. I think they had someone and they ended up dropping out or what have you. So as the show unfolded, I realized that some of the cast, they had already known that they were going to be on the show like 6 to 9 months out.
Oh, so, wow, yeah.
I got added like 2 weeks of going, you know, flying out to New York. So I just tried to get as much information as I could. Kind of got a couple of DVDs from a couple of people here and there just to kind of get a feel for the show because I hadn't watched it at all. I had heard about it. So, you know, for me to try to familiarize myself in a couple of weeks, I did what I could. But at the same time, you know, me understanding, you know, that we were going to be on a team, you know, there had to be that team aspect and concept to it. So as you said, it was done. I mean, you know, obviously you want to be a team player, but at the same time, there's going to be some strategic maneuvers along the way. But overall, you obviously you want to win, and there are going to be some strategic tactics that you have to take, you know, and they may work well or bode well for you, and they may not, as you saw in the first couple of episodes with Kevin Jonas.
Yes.
You know, I think he kind of hurt himself trying to play a game within a game. And so that's really not how you're supposed to really, conduct yourself. And really in terms of conducting business, you know, there's really, you can't play a game, you know, with the peers that you're working with and really trying to really play a game with Donald, you know what I mean? So
no.
You're in a project manager position, so you can't try to, you know, bring somebody to the boardroom that's not supposed to be there thinking that, you know, they're going to be voted off or fired for whatever reason. I think that was the wrong tactic that he took. And, you know, I think hindsight, looking at it, I think I'm sure he would have done some things differently. But those are some of the things as the show unfolded. You kind of get a sense how the show is going to go and how it's going to unfold and how Donald is going to assess, you know, each situation and make his firing.
It, definitely. And we all know reality television, there's a lot of stuff in the background that you're not seeing completely on TV. I've heard about that in Shark Tank and different reality shows in general. And that's the fun thing about it. You never know once finally you watch it and see, oh, my gosh, this is what happened. And it just it is what it is in so many ways. Now, what charity were you playing for, Terrell? And tell us about that.
Right. I was playing for the Boys and Girls Club of America. And obviously what Boys and Girls Club do, they provide pretty much a safe haven, pretty much a spot where kids can go and get off the streets. They can study, you know, educate themselves, kind of, you know, I think they, you know, some facilities provide tutors, you know, again, allow kids to kind of feel at home and, you know, they don't have to be out on the street doing, you know, God knows what. So, you know, I never was fortunate enough to be of something like that. So I understand what it offers, Boys and Girls Club offers. I mean, there's a number of people that back the Boys and Girls Club. And, you know, you think about Shaquille O'Neal and, you know, Denzel Washington. Yes. There's a number of people that are very heavily involved with that association. So I just wanted to do whatever I could, being that I know what those that organization does for kids, and just wanted to try to add to, you know, to what they're doing. So unfortunately I didn't, you know, I wasn't able to win, but again, I did, you know, what I could, and I put my best foot forward as far as my effort was concerned.
Well, you at least give them, being a project manager and having the opportunity at times, you were able to at least tell about how great that charity is and what the great things that they're doing. And that's the important thing, bringing in awareness. And that's what the Celebrity Apprentice is all about. All these celebrities get together, but really the emphasis is the charities that you're raising money for sure. Now, right from there, I guess we talk about life after football, your businesses and stuff like that, because you chose to go on the Celebrity Apprentice because you are really learning in that process of becoming an entrepreneur, life after football. I understand you have a t-shirt line, different things. So tell us a little about your t-shirt line and some of your other projects.
Well, yeah, my t-shirt line is based on what I went through as a kid and even post-football, you know, being able to be in the physical shape and condition that I'm in. People have always asked me, you know, what have I done? What did I do in my career to get to where I was? And even now, to be in the shape, you know, all walks of life, they know I've played football for 15 years. I consider myself in incredible condition and shape. And so people want to know, you know, how was I able to do it? You know, how do I maintain my level of fitness, and what to do is really giving them that message. And even for the kids that ask me, you know, well, how did you become, you know, a superstar? How did you become T.O.? And it wasn't an overnight process. And I try to express that to a lot of the kids that I may stand before in terms of high school, you know, junior high, elementary, or what have you, and a lot of the collegiate kids as well. It's just really trying to give them that blueprint of what it takes to get to the next level. And unfortunately, every kid is not going to make it to be a professional. Yeah. But, you know, there's an opportunity. But there's an opportunity there that if you do the right things and the necessary things, you will put yourself in a position, you know, just in case an opportunity knocks, that you never know what can happen. And that's how it happened for me. I never dreamed of being a professional football player. And that's what I want to convey to a lot of kids that may not even know right now. There's kids across the country right now laying their heads on their bed right now, have no idea that, you know, they put themselves doing the right things, eating right, doing what's more than required of them, doing it, putting forth that extra work, you know, when nobody's watching. You're setting yourself up and you're building a foundation for an opportunity that may arise, and you never know where that opportunity may take you or where it may bring you. And that's what I want to convey by that mantra of and that message on my shirt is what to do. Because you can do whatever it is that you want to do. And the kids that have dreams now, they're leaps and bounds ahead of where I was, because I never dreamed of being a professional athlete. And these kids already have that in their thoughts right now. And you cap that off with an opportunity, a dream capped off by an opportunity. You never know where it could be, where it could lead to. You can be the best collegiate or the best high school. And again, you do whatever it takes to build that foundation from collegiate or from high school to collegiate level. You're building a base of what you could become on a professional level. The fact that you may be given an opportunity. I went to a small school. I wasn't highly recruited coming out of high school. I wasn't a high school All-American or anything like that. But again, I was a kid that was hungry. I didn't want to accept being mediocre. I wanted to be just as good, if not better, than my peers around me that were in high school and even the ones that were in college that were better than me
right,
at the time.
Exactly, yeah.
When those people went on vacations and they were going to the clubs or doing this and that, I was in the weight room. I tried to find whatever it was to get me to where they were.
Right. And you saw it specifically, you never thought of that dream, but you had that work ethic to say, what do I need to do to be able to get to this level? You never dreamed it would happen, but you had that work ethic and that idea, I'm going to be the very best I can be. And you're trying to tell everyone that if you have a dream, go after it. It sounds like to you. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of those things, what you were saying, I just came up with an idea. It's called, how they have these Build-A-Bears. You can have a builder dream. What I mean? You can build a dream, based off, just the little nuances and the skills that you have. You can build upon that. You can enhance it by you don't have to be on the computer, 2 and 3 hours of playing games. Take some of that extra time, go out and play. Go play a sport, compete, allow yourself to get better. And that's what I did. It's that work ethic. Again, if you're not fast enough, if you're not strong enough, if you're not big as you think you should be, you can get bigger. You can get faster.
Yes.
You can become stronger. And it requires extra work. And that's what I did. I was a skinny, scrawny kid coming out of Alexander City, Alabama, going to college in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And I realized I made myself into who I am today. And I just want to realize, I can't emphasize it and I can't probably stress it enough to a lot of kids that I know that's just like me.
Right.
That were around 13, 14, 15 years of age. You really have no idea what it is, that lies ahead. But if you, like I said, put forth that extra work, things will happen. And I just basically took advantage of the opportunities that was in front of me and that was given.
That's tremendous. And that's a tremendous message for our listeners out there, what T.O. says. What can I do? What to do to become the best and not to give up and to continue to go and strive for your dreams, whatever dream it is, as you said, to build the dream. It could be any dream. It could be on the court. It could be on the field. It can be in the game of life. And that's the thing, is you're showing as an entrepreneur now, T.O., you have your new dreams. And what do you think those new dreams are? Those new dreams for you that you want to do?
Right now I'm in the process of trying to develop my own clothing line outside of the T-shirt. This is pretty much a fashion line. This is fashion with a message, somewhat of a, that style, being fashion forward. I've always been a guy that likes fashion. I like home decor. Come to realize I kind of had a niche and had an affection for home decor, which a lot of people don't know. Because anybody does know, unless they do some type of specialty piece about you, is that, all they knew me as is a football player. But I have passions outside of that. And so for me, it's fashion. I like home decor. There's things I'm working on right now with that. And so, again, don't be surprised if I kind of just pop out of nowhere, just like I did, from Alexander City and popped on the scene of Tennessee, Chattanooga. And then I just kind of popped out of nowhere when I started emerging with the San Francisco 49ers. So, again, I'm really trying to turn my passion now into some different paycheck. So I'm trying to turn my passion to a paycheck outside of football. And so, again, don't be alarmed. Don't be surprised, you know, when you see something, obviously, with me behind it. So that's where I am right now. Obviously, I'm trying to do some stuff, obviously, give back in terms of the knowledge that I've gained on the football field, give back in that certain way. I'm working on possibly doing some camps, sort of like a fantasy receiver camp or something similar to kind of educate kids and give them. I want to give back a lot that I've gained throughout my career, because I know I was, you know, 20, 30 years ago, I was a nobody. Right. Nobody knew anything about Terrell Owens, and I was at UT Chattanooga, wasn't a high school All-American, anything like that. Didn't play my freshman year. And I was one of those kids that, you know, took advantage of opportunity. I can't stress it enough. You know, when I was in high school, I did the same thing in college. And when I left college and I went to the pros, I did the same thing. And that was ask the coach, when can I get in the weight room after hours? I did That's it in great. High school, yeah. Did it in college. When I couldn't afford to go home for the holidays and everybody, and I was sitting at my room on campus or whatever, had nothing to do, barely any food to eat, I would ask the coach, could I get the key to the weight room? And I went down there in the weight room and I lifted. You know, every little bit counts. It all adds up.
The work ethic,
you know,
yes.
Over time. And so that's what happened to me. I started to get bigger. I started to get faster. And I did it when I got into the professional, into the National Football League. Our facility was 24/7. Hired a personal trainer, had him come out, stay with me. After practice, I would go back into go home for a few hours, go back to the facility. We would get some workouts in. And, you know, that's how I became, you know, physical. That's how I became a load to deal with on the football field, because I put in that hard work. And so when everybody sees the celebrations and me having excitement and me entertaining on the football field, that's where all of that stemmed from, because I knew the hard work, the grind of work that I put into it, to where when I scored touchdowns, I wanted to celebrate. I wanted to just give back to the fans that were, you know, that's been working all week. You know, they did one day out of the week, they come to the park and watch their favorite team and some of their favorite players play. And you know, and I'm hoping that I was a lot of fans' favorites.
Yeah, and you say dream big and go big. I had advice today. Someone said go big, and meaning you go for your, right. your biggest. Don't settle for less. You can do so much. And I heard about you talking about your faith. The same thing with my faith. I said, you know what? I'm going to go big. I'm going to go for the best. I'm not going to settle for less, because God wants us to do our very best in everything we do. And that's what you showed in your work ethic and in so many different ways, Terrell. And then, and again, the last thing is the commercial. What'd you think of that Super Bowl commercial? I watched it and I was thinking, and then it's very cool because I know some of your people that surround you, and I saw the post on Facebook, and I'm like, I can't wait to watch the commercial. What'd you think of that whole process being back to the Super Bowl in a different way on a commercial?
Well, it's funny. I have yet to see the actual commercial itself, because I was out of the country doing some business, trying to create an international fan base. So I haven't seen the commercial just yet. I do have a DVR. But again, the feedback that I've gotten on the commercial has been great. Everybody loved it. And, I think, again, you know, for myself, you know, me being, you know, who I am from the South, I'm definitely a humble guy. I understand where I grew up and where I'm from. And, you know, you can't please everybody. Everybody's going to have something negative to say. But I know in my heart of heart who I am, who my family, my mom and my grandmother raised me to be. And that's all I can be. You know, you're not going to be able to please 100% of people in this world. And so for me, you know, I can make fun of myself. You know, I've never really taken myself, you know, serious as people may think. So for myself, it was fun to do it. I'm on a national stage again, where millions of people viewed the Super Bowl. They viewed the commercial. I shared the same commercial space with, you know, the likes of Brett Favre, Larry Allen, Franco Harris, and Emmitt Smith. So You know, what better other people and Hall of Famers to do a commercial with than those guys? So, again, I'm blessed and fortunate and thankful for the opportunity. And, again, you know, for myself, I don't think I'm going to go anywhere. I'm going to always feel like I'm somebody. I'm going to be relevant. Again, I thank God for the opportunities. And even just with the opportunities that being on Celebrity Apprentice may bring, being, you know, obviously in a national commercial that Wix.com provided. Again, you know, God is—he's always blessing. He's always putting me in position to succeed. You know, again, there's a lot of people out there that smile in your face, but you know, they don't want to see you do well.
Yeah. That's so true. So I appreciate T.O. taking the time to be on the show, especially with your busy schedule. You're amazing, and it's really great to learn who the true person is. We talk about athletes all the time, and we just watch what they do on the field or what the media says. But when you get to have a nice one-on-one conversation, learn who T.O. is, it's fantastic, and how you're trying to be a great role model for kids and to really have them dream big and do the very best that they can. Where's the best place we can find you, Terrell? Where can we go?
Oh, man, you can always go to TerrellOwens.com. There's always going to be updates. I'm constantly trying to keep my website as updated and fresh as possible. You know, obviously, you know, trying to, you know, keep the content on there fresh. Obviously, I'm a very savvy social media guy. Definitely find me on Instagram, Twitter. My name on both is at Terrell Owens. So again, you know, please follow. You know, if you got any questions or anything, there are places on there where you can reach out and try to, you know, get involved with some of the things that I'm doing. If you need to reach out for any bookings or anything like that, there is information on all of those sites. And, I'm on Facebook as well. You can find me at Facebook at TerrellOwens.com. I know I have a fan page and I have a personal page, but either way, you can get a hold of me. So, again, I just appreciate this opportunity to be able to really just share, you know, some of what I've been going through, what I'm continuing to do. And obviously, with God's blessings and His mercy, I'm always going to try to feel like I'm on top. And so sometimes it's not always you can't see the light at the end of the tunnel. But you just keep grinding, and that's what I'm doing now, man. Just grinding, and just trying to be the best person. And I understand the platform that God has put me on, and to really to impact a lot of lives. And so, and I thank God for that opportunity that I'm able to do that, because people can now they can hear me for themselves. They can hear the sincerity in my voice, and they can hear the passion. And that's what I played with. I played with this same passion, and I want to be able to give back. And, you know, because I know there's a lot of kids out there and a lot of parents out there that want the best for their kids. And so what better opportunity than to take advantage of someone like myself. And there are other guys around the league that are doing the same thing.
Right, and that's the thing about the league, and when we paint a picture about people without getting to know them, and that's, I believe, I've interviewed so many NFL athletes, and you guys are fantastic, and I wish that people would see truly who they are as people, because that's what it is, and we learned tonight definitely about that. So, T.O., thanks again for calling, and best of luck to you.
All right, thanks so much. Thank you.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Neil Haley Show. I'm the host of the show, Neil Haley. You can go to my website, TotalTutor.net, for more information. Twitter, TotalTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TotalTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And we have an amazing show, and we're simulcasting with the Total Celebrity Show. So I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity Mark Steins, award-winning journalist from the Hallmark Channel, and much more entertainment tonight. Mark, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic and excited to talk to you today about your career and different things. It's very interesting. Growing up in a small town, did you ever think that you would be where you are in the media and everything with Entertainment Tonight,
the Hallmark Channel,
and all that? No.
I had no clue. In fact, excuse me, people have asked me along the way when I've given speeches or talked to students, like, you know, what do I need to do? I want to have your job. I would love to be an entertainment reporter or a TV host. I have no idea how I got here. I grew up in a small town in Iowa. My parents were, you know, farmers. My dad worked at John Deere for many years after, you know, he left the fields. And, you know, my mom essentially cleaned houses for a living and could scrape together and was mostly a homemaker. So I really didn't have, I personally didn't have the mentors in my life to open doors. So a lot of it was, you know, just doing it on, you know, what I've been taught as a kid, which is just a hard work ethic and showing up before everybody else and staying later than everybody else and making sure the job is done top notch, you know. And I think that's what the fabric of America is, you know. We roll up our sleeves and we get busy. And that's the magic behind it, you know.
Definitely.
Doing it every day.
Doing it every day. So growing up, was this in your blood when you said you were a hard worker in Iowa, but was this in your blood that you liked to entertain and liked to talk to people and were a talker in school and stuff?
I remember when I was a kid, when I was a little kid, we used to play records all the time and I would pretend I was the DJ. And we would record ourselves. I wish those tapes existed because we had them on cassette tapes. It would have been great to listen back to those. But I was really a behind the scenes guy. I still enjoy that aspect of it. You know, I'm a photographer at heart. I love the visual aspect of what we do and some of the technical stuff. But I had some mentors early on when I got out of college and started an internship at a local TV station in Waterloo, Iowa. And they saw my potential, and I think that was very very critical in my development. They were like, no, you need to get in front of the camera. And I was like, no, I was too insecure to do that. And sooner or later, they convinced me to start believing a little bit more in myself, and next thing I know, I was putting myself out there and taking some risks, and they started to pay off. But it took a long time. I mean, I was turned down time and time again trying to get that first job. It's so hard in this business because they want you to, you know, prove that you can do the job, but you can't prove if you can do the job if they don't give you a job.
Exactly.
So that's a catch-22. Somebody along the way has to be convinced to take a chance on you, and that happened for me, finally.
Yeah, so when you're talking about taking a chance, Mark, basically you were growing up in Iowa, and what made you say to yourself, I got to go out and get out there and get my tapes out and my resumes? What decision did you make that was really getting yourself out there to get your break?
Well, I had sent numerous, for a solid year, I was sending out, you know, the old tapes, and it was such an antiquated way of getting, you know, now we have social media, we can be connected, and the good thing about that is we can reach out to people and have contact with them. The bad thing is everybody's doing it, so
right,
it's just
exactly.
This massive amount that you have to compete against. What happened for me was really the turning point for my career. I was a cameraman in Waterloo, Iowa, and struggling, trying to, you know, I would make tapes on the news desk and, you know, in a sort of a faux newscast setting after the show was over, and I'd ask the anchors to sit in just so I could get something. And while I was doing that, I was assigned to cover the Republican National Convention in 1988 down in New Orleans, and I went down and the station that I worked for had three stations under their umbrella, so I ended up sort of shooting for our you know, sister stations as well. While I was there, the most unusual and special event happened that really opened the door for me, and that was, it's silly, but I, because of my resemblance to Tom Cruise, I was mistaken. It was a mistaken identity. And all of a sudden, next thing I know, we're being followed and chased. We had, you know, Entertainment Tonight ended up doing a story on it. And because of that exposure, I'd equate it to what it would be like to win The Bachelor today, because there were no reality shows back then. It was this guy who wants to be a sportscaster, who looks like Tom Cruise in a small television market, gets this exposure, and it was about the time he was doing Cocktail and Top Gun and all that stuff. So next thing I know, I had a couple of job offers come in, and I snatched up one in Springfield, Missouri, And that's where I got my start. And with that window opening, I jumped through it. But I knew that I had to, once I got through that window and that opportunity opened, the rest was all hard work, because you can get somewhere by luck.
Exactly.
It takes skill and hard work to keep that position. And that just, I just followed that formula.
You followed that formula, and it's a break. You never expected it. You're working for a small station in Iowa at that time, Mark, or where you were?
Yeah, I was a cameraman at Waterloo, Iowa, at the NBC affiliate, KWWL. And the job then took me to Springfield, Missouri, and I was there for about 3 years when, out of nowhere, one day two agents called and just said, "Hey, do you have a representation?" And I was like, "No, I don't." And I don't know why or how that happened. Sometimes when you get into small markets, others, I was doing well and getting some recognition. And I think perhaps sometimes you get other affiliates in the market be like, "Let's help this guy move along," and maybe made some phone calls. But regardless, it was a short time after that that I read at KCAL Channel 9 in Los Angeles. So I made a leap from Springfield, Missouri to Los Angeles, which was a huge jump.
Wow.
Which was a shot of confidence and also major, all the insecurities you have of going, "Wow, am I good enough?" Started popping up. So again, that was just overridden a lot by just, continuing to go to work every day and keeping your head down and working hard.
So that's interesting. It wasn't like you jumped right to Entertainment Tonight after looking like Tom Cruise. You went right to L.A. right after that. So you had to get more experience in front of the camera before that opportunity. But you had contacts with E.T. because of what happened at the convention and stuff and the funny resemblance and all that?
Not necessarily. I had sort of a small world. It was almost 7 years to the day. The story ran on Entertainment Tonight. I put it up on my Facebook page a while ago, so it lives there. You can see it. It's quite funny. But it is, I think it through people knowing people, I ended up, and being in Los Angeles, this is one of the turning points, too, for me when I realized the opportunity that was in front of me. As I was leaving my sportscast one night driving home in Los Angeles, and we, the KCAL station that I worked for, carried the Lakers. And, everybody in town watches the Lakers. So as I was driving home, I remember I was coming down the 10 freeway at the Fairfax exit, and it hit me that Johnny Carson could have watched me. Because, the game is on, and then the game just, you leave it on, and then it goes right into the news. And I was like, wow, my show could be pumped into the homes of all of these people, including him, and why he's important. As a kid growing up, I used to watch him all the time.
Okay.
And then I realized, wow, now he could see me. And that was the thing that really said, whoa, I got to step up my game even more. And I've got to find a good style that works for me. I've got to hone my craft, better my skills. At that point, I enrolled in Groundlings Improv because I thought thinking on my feet would be a way to be able to help move me forward. So I began pouring in a little bit more to the performance side. I went to acting school and studied almost 5 years of doing that. And, all those things helped develop me as a talent on camera.
You were really one in preparation. You talked about hard work growing up in Iowa, and you saw the opportunity. You have a platform like being on a station in L.A. Who's going to see? You never know. And from that circumstance that happened in Iowa that ended up to be in L.A., you said, "I got to be the very best." And being a performer, a lot of you have to have all those abilities, especially. And when we talk about, interviewing all those amazing people at E.T. and then going on and doing so many more things, you learned everything about this business, it sounds like, Mark. You didn't want to just be, okay, I'm in front of the camera and I'm just a pretty face and that's all that matters, and really I'm just going to be like the normal local. You had high expectations for yourself, it sounds like.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, part of that, it's a blessing and a curse, because you're always feeling like you're trying to prove yourself, and you just have to, because it's a very competitive business that we're in.
Right, exactly.
And, the fact that there's, when I started, there weren't all these webcasts and whatnot, so there's more places for people to go, but the prime jobs are harder and harder to get. So, you know, where I am now, you know, I was 17 years at Entertainment Tonight and blessed to travel the world and do all these amazing things. I mean, I was sitting in my office the other day. I was just sort of reflecting, and I've got pictures of, you know, my, you know, travels and whatnot. And I'm looking up and I'm seeing a photo of me with Bill Pullman in Egypt. And then Ben Affleck when he was shooting The Talented Mr. Ripley and Cher at the Super Bowl. And I'm seeing this, and I thought, wow, if somebody just walked in and looked at this, they're like, this is a dream, you know, job. Look at how amazing it is.
Exactly.
Then I immediately stopped and went, you know, those are all building blocks. You know, there was a lot of sacrifice along the way. There's birthdays that were missed, you know, baby showers for my first, you know, I had to walk out to go to the Olympics and cover that in Salt Lake and miss out on things that were very special to me personally as a family man.
That's
that
great.
You have to begin to compromise. And sometimes people are like, no, you know, I can't tell you how many vacations were interrupted or cut short because of it. But, you know, those are the things that you have to find peace with within yourself and go, this is what's being asked of me. You know, I tell students all the time, I go, you know, you may have a relationship with somebody and you check in with them every day and you buy them presents and you get together for movies or dinners. Right. You have to do that with your career. You have to hold the hand of that career and every day feed it, check in with it. How is this nurturing and growing? Because it's the same thing with any relationship you have in your life. You have to build that.
To be successful in a career, Mark, and we're going to take a break, but to be successful in a career, you have to constantly want to become better. And you did that as an entrepreneur. You have to do the same thing, anything, teaching, any profession, or it's going to become old and it's just going to be like working for the weekend. But you saw the passion, but I'm glad to talk about the family life. And when we get to the second segment, I really want to focus more on that. So when we get back, more with Mark Steins, formerly from Entertainment Tonight with the Hallmark Channel, and enjoying the conversation. And I love hearing about family as well. You're watching Total Education Network, Neil Haley Show, simulcast with the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just back to the Neil Haley Show with Mark Steins, formerly of Entertainment Tonight, celebrity from the Hallmark Channel. And the story, Mark, I'm just amazed, again, how grounded you are in so many ways growing up in Iowa, and finally, you know, how you got your big break in L.A. So tell us the story of how you got with his Entertainment Tonight.
It was as simple as just what I mentioned about who was watching, and I was thinking, you know, Johnny Carson could be watching.
Yeah.
Well, also watching was this very talented and eager producer, Linda Bell Blue, and Linda, ironically, was from Springfield, Missouri, where I started my career. Not that we even knew each other or had any sort of contact, but she watched me on television, and Linda at the time was working at Hard Copy when that show was very popular, and she had shifted over to take over the reins at Entertainment Tonight. And the next thing I know, I'm getting an opportunity to go in and audition for the show, and the rest sort of is, you know, history as far as her bringing me in. When she took over, she was, you know, they sort of shifted their whole philosophy. They needed somebody who is, you know, sort of a run-and-gun player, and I was that. You know, I had gone out and made a couple of documentaries in Madagascar and Borneo, produced and wrote and directed myself and all of it. So I really had a sort of street smart. I knew how to work something in the field, and that's where I was a one-man band. I shot my own stuff when I was in Springfield, so I had this sort of full palette of experience and a broad base. So when I went out in the field, not that I directed myself because it was a union shop and you had to have directors and all that, but I was very aware of what needed to be done, and I could deliver for her in this sort of, you know, new offense that she instilled. And that, you know, again, goes back to the foundation of hard work and not being one-dimensional.
So you learned a lot from the business in Springfield and was able to take that into a higher level with Entertainment Tonight and be able to do a lot of things that more than just being an on-air host or on-air reporter, because you could do it all. And they say, hey, let's just get Mark out here, and you get the interview and you do a lot of the different parts of the editing process or managing the team. And that's what they need, right? And in a reporter like that, somebody can go and go out and get the big interview, right?
So absolutely. It takes a village to put on a show like Entertainment Tonight, even though it's a half-hour show and I'm doing a two-hour show now. There's, you all have to work in harmony with one another. You all have to be able to do your job. And, you know, when they send you to some place like, you know, whether you're in at the Cannes Film Festival or in Egypt and Cairo, you get off a plane and you're by yourself and you're looking around. You can't read anything because, you know, you're in Egypt and you're trying to figure out where you even go to get the baggage claim. And you're looking for somebody who's holding a card with your name on it, some driver who's going to pick you up and pair you up with a remote crew that you've never met before, and you all have to immediately hit the ground running and go to work. And, you know, you need your expertise to really step up to be able to sort of do those kinds of jobs. And that's where it pays off, you know, that you have put the work in and sowed the seeds early in your career, so you know how to handle situations like that.
Yeah, definitely. Learn how to handle different situations. This interview's going to be cut to 2 minutes. What am I going to do? Or I have to do it while there's a lot of noise in the background. You just never know. Or where can I find the best shot to talk to this person? And then you have your talking to their publicist and going back and forth. And, you have 3 minutes to do something. You have to be able to move on the fly. And you learned that from Iowa to Missouri to all those different places. So, Mark, I know it's kind of like almost interviewing Barbara Walters in some way, looking at myself as a young journalist who's did this and with no training. Basically, I was a professional wrestler for so many years. To listen to somebody, I want to interview those big names and to learn from you, especially in seeing an award-winning journalist. Tell me specifically two of your most favorite interviews you've ever had all time. Just a little bit about why you like that.
Yeah, I get this question a lot, and it's funny because there are times when I work with people, you know, the young producers at Home and Family, and we'll have somebody come on. We have Belinda Carlisle on just recently, and, you know, and we've had, so many, but they kind of want to know the same thing. They're like, what was the best time of your life? Or that's like saying, what's your favorite color? It's really hard to pinpoint that. And I personally direct them away from those conversations because I want to have a specific conversation with the guests that I have. But back to answering your question, I mean, I've always had the best interviews for me are those who come to dance to the same music that I'm dancing to.
Right.
And that's people like Cher or Travolta has always been one of my favorite. Whenever I see them, I know we're going to have really lively banter because we just have a connection, sort of a friendship that exists. So we're just happy to see each other again, and they work. I'll bring up one example. This is not related to my best or one of my more memorable ones, but right. It goes back to having an interview cut. I had Nicole Kidman's first interview after her split with Tom Cruise.
Oh, my. Yeah.
We were at the Cannes Film Festival, and she was promoting Moulin Rouge, which was a big step for her, you know, and this Baz Luhrmann film. And we had 20 minutes in a conversation with her to sit down, so we had this beautiful scene, you know, we're up on a bluff shooting, you know, in this sort of villa-esque area that we had rented. And in short, she, you know, the interview, okay, we're going to cut it to 15 minutes. We're like, okay, we got that advance notice.
Yeah.
And when she finally arrived, she sat down, and as they were miking her up, the publicist comes in and says, you have 7 minutes.
I've seen that. And I've been there, done that. It's tough.
And,
yeah.
And you just go, okay, how am I going to do this gracefully? How am I going to get to the conversation about what's going on in her you know, private life? And I know if I don't address the movie and just go with personal stuff, I'm going to lose her immediately. And you have to know how to make that transition and when to make it and how to make it
right.
In a manner where they don't just disengage with you and end up getting yes and no answers. And you have to know how to ask those questions. And that's the real magic. And still maintain a relationship of integrity where they want to come back and talk to you at some other point, because if they don't like you, they don't request you. If they don't request you for an interview, then right. Your employer you have no worth to your employer. So you're really at the crossroads, mm-hmm. if you will, of maintaining the relationship where they want to come back and, you know, have a second serving or a third or fourth.
Exactly.
Because they can trust you, but your producer also is saying, I need to get the goods because we don't have a show. So you're in the eye of the storm, and you have to try to make it a win-win all the way around.
Yeah, very interesting what you said, making that connection. I try to make my connection with a lot of my guests and stuff, and I see that it's telling a story. As a professional wrestler, I had to tell a story, Mark. Interviewing somebody, I have to tell a story. Beginning, middle, end, and also being able to listen to the guest's answers and move on to the next question, because if you're not listening to that person, Mark, you can't change up your questions based on that answer, right? That's key as a journalist, to right. really listen to your guest.
Well, the best question you could answer or ask of somebody is why? If you remember, if you just stay in the moment with them and they'll tell a story, just follow up with, well, why? Why did that happen? Or, you know, why did you do that?
Right,
or
exactly.
How did you feel about that? It's a very simple way to continue to dig deeper if you have the time. Sometimes you don't. You're not permitted that in an interview. But, you know, I've always looked at it as if this is not about me. And my job is to get them talking and keep them talking. You know, it's a little different for me now because I host a 2-hour show on Hallmark, and, you know, people want to know a little bit about your personality. So I try to inject as much of my personal life as I can, but I always remember this is not about me.
Right.
Ever.
Exactly.
Ever.
It's about the guest and making the guest. So let's talk about Home and Family. Now, I'm really impressed with the Hallmark Channel and all the new programming. I've had other guests from the Hallmark Channel on the show. They're really doing a great job. But so tell us about this project and how you really enjoyed it, especially having 2 hours to interview interesting people and bring, I think, that definite family life that you see so important for your family and families in general.
Well, first of all, let me just say thank you for allowing me the platform to talk about it, because I'm going to do my best not to sound like a PR machine, but I will tell you this, I'm talking from my heart when I say this. I am in the wheelhouse of where I need to be in my life right now, hosting a show called Home and Family, because it represents all that I really am as a person. So people who know me and have watched the show say that, they're like, this is what you worked your entire career for, is to be in this sort of chair right now. With that said, we feel, and we just celebrated our 500th episode before, just shortly before Christmas, and last night we got together as a crew and went out, and I gave a little talk, a little pat on the back to our crew guys, and there were a lot of young faces that were there, and I kept telling them, there's nothing like this. You will never find a show like this. If you do in your career, you're blessed, because this is like a unicorn, you know? You're not going to find this. This is sort of a fantasy, but we really feel like we have something special. There's nothing like this on television anywhere.
No.
And, you know, when we launched, there was the Ricky Lake show. There was, you know, Steve Harvey came on. Jeff Probst's show came on. Meredith Vieira has come and gone. Queen Latifah has come and gone. There's so many shows that have tried sort of this, in this sort of venue, have tried and failed. Steve Harvey is the one that stuck. Our show started off at the same time, and we have been building momentum slowly. And that's, I put that on Hallmark because Bill Abbott and Michelle Vickery over there have had nothing but confidence and faith in us that we would get this right and get it going. And, you know, the first 2 years out of the gate, we've got Emmy nominations, and
fantastic.
We continue to build audience. We can continue to build great guests who come into our show. And everybody who leaves our show walks out going, wow, this is a lot of fun. You guys are so nice. And this is just, it's really an improv. It's 2 hours of improv.
Wow.
All,
yeah.
And that's as what you do and what I do, getting a chance to host something like that. It's a combination of how do I control this and yet let it live and be free and not manipulate it and just let the moments happen and trust that they will. That was hard for me. That was a
right.
whole
because you have everything in the can saying you only have 20 minutes. Now you're controlling, you're stirring the drink. You have 2 hours so that you really can learn about those guests. So Mark, I can't believe we're almost running out of time. Where's the best place we can watch your show, find out information, see stuff online, and also find out information on you? Where's the best place to go?
Yeah, you can, you know, I'm on all the social medias, Facebook, I'm on Twitter at Mark Steinis, I'm on Instagram, and invite everybody to, you know, jump in, because I've been really getting back into the social media stuff recently.
Yeah.
But Hallmark Channel is the place to find us. We're on from 10 to 12 every day. Check your local listings, as you say, because some of the affiliates and whatnot carry us. But the great thing is Hallmark reruns us right after. So we tape the day before because we're on the West Coast. But we tape the day before, and then the show runs, but then the previous day runs right after us. So it's a four-hour block, and if you miss, you know, one, you can watch the rerun, and of course, Great. My mom watches them all. But you can find us there.
I like the idea about family, and that's so great. So, Mark, thanks again for calling the program. We'll stay in touch. We'll connect through social media. And it was an honor to learn from a journalist like yourself and a great host. So thanks again for calling.
Thank you so much. You're so kind. Thank you so much for having me on.
All right. Take care, Mark. Okay. Bye-bye. That was the Neil Haley Show. See you next week. Take care, everyone.